Welcome to Omschooling for Spirituality. The Flow is a delightful mix of insight, divine inspiration, and humor, where wisdom meets earthiness to help your ongoing spiritual growth and transformation. Follow the flow of enlightenment and explore everything spiritual through the deepest self-inquiry as student Lisa Berry asks master spiritual teacher G.P. Walsh the kinds of questions you would ask an elder, a wise man, or a sage, and receive direct, simple, comprehensive, and deeply human lessons and teachings. From transcending the experience of separation, releasing old conditioned patterns and wounds, and alleviating suffering, to demystifying esoteric practices and revealing one's true purpose and innate freedom. Welcome to the flow of enlightenment. Transformation is all there is.
And well, hello everyone. We are transitioning GP from one show into the next. Hello, GP.
Hey, Lisa.
Oh, I'd like to share, take this moment to share with everybody that absolutely you guys must hear the show that Rosalind Fung does here right on Om Times Radio. It's called Activate Your Soulgasmic Business with host Rosalind Fung. And GP was just on there with her. And you know, it's so interesting. Sometimes we think, oh, you know, well, this one's for spirituality and this one's for business and this one's for relationships, but transformation, it is all there is. It's all together.
It's true.
Yes. So I want to invite everybody to listen to that. And the reason why I do want to invite you, everybody specifically, is because you hear us yakking away every Tuesday, GP and I, and I'm asking questions and that, but you were able to share your story, you know, that significant on the bridge night story. And I would love for people to hear that. And Rosalind is, I just love her. As a host, as a person, she's so fabulous. So please, everybody, tune into the, I think the replay is usually available by nighttime, but you know what, check it out starting tomorrow. That would be great. Yeah. So that was good job, GP.
Thank you.
People want to know, why am I listening to this guy? You know, he's great when I tune in. I love that. But, you know, getting to know you is another aspect.
There's not really that much to know.
Well, you know when I got, you know, and as we, because today's show, I'll just announce the theme, the question for today, which I think it's kind of, it's awesome. I would love for you to help introduce somebody in a weird way, introduce somebody that we all might have heard of. We all maybe think we know a little bit, but maybe we don't. And today we're going to have GP help, you know, we're going to learn about the Buddha. So it's really getting to know people today. Early it was getting to know GP, and now it's getting to know the Buddha. And you said something to me, so I'm gonna make a bold statement, and then we can kind of dive in from there. But the bold statement you made to me was, well, the Buddha isn't really a person. It's not his name. It's a verb. It's a title. It's a state. And I kind of was like, you know, jaw dropped, went, what? Wait a minute. What's going on here? So what is the Buddha? Because we all hear about him, quote unquote.
Well, right. And, you know, it's kind of, it's just kind of the way we've all been educated and like to think of it strictly in terms of the archaeology, you know, in terms of the history of it and the like. And so the actual significance of the appearance of a figure in history gets lost by all of all of the ideas about it and the historical accuracy and did he really live here and there and do this and that and, yes. And the like. And the same thing is even more true of Christ, who it's a similar thing. It's what he represented, not the historical character. Of which there's not a whole lot of evidence. There's more evidence to the Buddha's actual existence than there is to Christ's. But, you know, we have to sort through all of the mythology and legends that grow up around it to try to get to just the pure teaching itself, the pure idea, the essential idea that has been trying to be communicated. And got communicated in the life of the Buddha, which represents your awakening, right? I mean, yeah, okay, there's this guy who was really smart, he lived a long time ago, right? Or, you know, this other guy, and he did miracles, he walked on water and stuff, right? It's like, yeah. Well, great, so what?
Yeah.
Well, what in the world does that have to do with me?
Right? I think a lot of people go, I want to be like him. It's a thing we think we have to, if we're good enough, and if we do enough good deeds and we don't sin, we could be like Buddha or Jesus or Christ, you know?
Yes, and that's a good sign. I want to be like that is a different kind of deal. Now you're out of, you know, history and academia, and you're into the realm of religion or spirituality, spiritual practice. How do I be like that?
Ah. Oh, it's softer too.
And it's much softer, yeah. And now suddenly it's life transforming. It's not just the gaining of knowledge. It's transformative. And there's a beautiful but quite mystical statement from Christ in the Gospel of Thomas, where he says, "He who drinks from my mouth shall become as I am, and I shall be he." Quite mystical.
Yes.
Drinking of the words, the true spirit of Christ or of Buddha, you become as they are. And they become you. It is a flowering. Think of you as the caterpillar. You're going to enter into this process, and what on the other side, you are the Buddha. The Buddha represents, the word Buddha is a Sanskrit word, and it simply means the awakened one.
Yes.
Not one who has awakened, because now you still have many, but the awakened one, the one and only being, that which is the essence and soul of all. One soul, a countless number of faces on that soul, but one singular beingness. That's the Buddha. And then how the Buddha appears, how this essential nature appears in the field of time is every single being you've ever met or ever could meet. But then throughout history, there are these luminaries that are like, they simply represent the totality in the best way possible, right? While still having somebody to represent it, because how do you represent the infinite, right? The pure infinite is just can't be seen. I mean, where do you put it, right?
Right. Wait, let me get a bigger bucket.
Yeah, I need a bigger closet.
when you said about that was really so helpful to me. It had a lot of clarity around it the first time you said it's not about the one awakening, it's the awakening one. And when I hear that, of course, my brain right now can only go as big in this my very material state, the planet, the world. And you hear a lot of people say, you know, when the world awakens, and is that kind of like the goal, the world kind of, can the world become Buddha, can be like Buddha and awaken in that way?
The world is Buddha. That's the awakening. It doesn't become anything. You see that it already has, it always has been. The awakening, you're awakening from a dream. You're waking from a slumber, from an illusion. It's an illusion.
The illusion. No,
the sun isn't going across the sky.
Right.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah. Yeah. The world is not what you think it is. The world is not a bunch of separate people running around bumping into each other. It is the manifestation of the one being. When that is seen, when it's truly recognized in your heart, you will see that everywhere. You will see God everywhere. Wherever the face lands, it sees the face of God, as the Sufis say. It isn't that people disappear. It's not that kind of an illusion, right? Mm. I mean, if the sun was going across the sky and the earth was stationary, it wouldn't look any different.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's a good thing to note. Right.
It would look the same, right? Mm. So from the perspective of our senses, That's exactly what we are experiencing. We still feel like we're stationary and the sun is moving. We still refer to the sunrise and the sunset.
Yes.
It's not moving, folks. We are.
Do you remember that image that we get to look at, the black and white one, where it looks like you either see two people face to face or you see the goblet or wine glass?
Yes.
Yes, exactly. And that you just reminded me of that and how neat that is. And it proves, like, yes, we can. It's just how we're looking at things. Nothing's changed. Yeah. But
And that it's one of the beautiful things about that particular picture, the faces and the goblet or candlestick, is that you can't see both of them at the same time.
Oh, you're right. Oh, I never thought about that. Yeah. You'd have to go really fast, like back and forth.
And what's actually happening is a very subtle capacity to shift perception. Because the image remains the same. It's just what is being seen is completely a matter of perception. And so you realize that the world isn't what you think it is. It's how you perceive it to be. What's the reality of it? Well, the reality is your perception of it. Nothing else. There isn't anything. Which is it? Faces or a candlestick?
And neither is wrong.
Both.
Right.
Neither this nor that nor both nor neither.
So what is it when we have this innate, I don't know if it's innate, maybe it's not innate, judgment, like, oh, well, you saw, oh, the old, there's one with the old woman and the bonnet, and the young woman with a bonnet, and they say, if you see the old woman first, you're fearing age, and if you see the young woman, then you still feel vibrant, and, you know, and I think, why are we still stuck on judging who sees what, and, well, I'm better because I saw this one, cup full.
Right. That's the nature of the egoic mind, right? That's just the nature of it. It wants to place meaning on it. And of course, the meaning is always to make me better.
Right, yes. and when Buddha...
And that's the problem. That's the cause of the illusion. The ego keeps projecting on things, stuff where there isn't anything, right? The pure seeing as it is, that's the Buddha. It's not a person. It is the power to see things as they are.
The power to see things as they are. Can we replace, we can replace that then to say Buddha is not, hi, I'm Buddha. It's I have the power, not the power, but I am in that place where I see things as they are.
Then you are the Buddha.
And then I really am the Buddha.
And you are the Buddha, yeah. Because it is the Buddha. The Buddha is that capacity for seeing. The Buddha is the truth made known, right? See, there's a point at which you, even doing the seeing, falls away, and you realize that it's only been the Buddha that's been seeing. God is the only consciousness there is. It is consciousness that sees. And when the sense of identity has fallen away, you see consciousness in its purity. It's the same consciousness, you, me, and the gnat that's buzzing around your head. And it is one consciousness. That's the Buddha. It is the only thing that's ever seeing. That which is hearing my words right now is consciousness. Mm. It's not the body. This microphone isn't hearing my words. The headphones you're wearing aren't hearing my words. You are. What is it that's actually doing the hearing? Well, that's the self, that point of cognition. That's consciousness. And we've just taken that and mixed it up with all sorts of conditioning and all sorts of things and reduced it to think it's a person with a personal capability.
Yes.
It isn't. It's pure consciousness. That's the recognition of reality as it is. And that recognition is the Buddha, the awakened one.
There are two big things wrapped up in that one, but I'm going to go to what I think is the easiest.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. When you said about it falls away, and you had mentioned that we just were talking before. See, I want to share with the listeners that I always need a conversation with GP before the shows just so I can wrap my head around it a little bit. And when we were talking about Siddhartha, I'll let you share his journey, but you had mentioned he had to disappear before the enlightenment. So he disappeared and then enlightenment happened, just like the caterpillar disappears and then the butterfly. When you said that just now, you said it falls away. Should we be afraid of it, but why are we so afraid of disappearing?
Well, because we're heavily identified with the egoic mind. We think I'm going to disappear. I'm going to die. Right?
Yes.
But the only thing that can disappear is that which was an illusion. The truth can't disappear. You can't disappear. Only the false ideas you have about yourself are going to disappear. And God, good riddance.
Yeah, I guess. And well, do we mourn the illusion that does disappear?
Only while we're still attached to it. You know, so, as long as there's still this appetite, right? For, you know, that the world's going to give me something. You know, there's going to be some benefit I'm going to get. As long as that's there, there's going to be a sense of loss and a sense of grief. But it's kind of like, you know, you're out in the desert and you're mourning the fact that the mirage isn't real.
Oh, I wish it was real. Yes.
Right? But it was never real. There's nothing there. It's not going to quench your thirst. It has nothing to offer you.
Ah, right.
That's the point, right? It has nothing to offer you. What the world, what we believe the world can give us, it can't. But we're convinced it can. Oh, just that next job, that next relationship, that next pay raise, that next lottery win, right? Is always that's the grasping, and then we grasp it, and it's like grasping smoke. Right? We're not satisfied. Oh well, I guess I need more. No, that wasn't quite the right thing, because it's not there. It's a mirage. So the satisfaction and peace you're seeking aren't in the world. They're in you.
I always feel like you make everything easy, and I think, oh, good, I can just, you know, like, bang all those things off what you just said. Relationship, money, this, not, there you go. It's, I don't need to go that way. It's going to be inward. And we'll pause for the commercial break, but we have to come back to that one, because I think a lot of people, that's will go deeper into what mirage are you grasping at? Yes, and how we can help find, not find, but yes, see our Buddha, be our Buddha.
The Real Conscious Connection, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment, a philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Touch, move, and inspire. Sharing your story of how you overcame your deepest struggle will serve as someone else's survival guide. You are ready to get the book out of your head and onto the page. I'm Jocelyn Bellows, host of Breakdown to Wake Up, a live stream show dedicated to sharing personal journeys of men and women who have traversed through mazes of uncertainty, dark clouds, and dishonoring themselves, and the lessons they have learned along this path of what one can accomplish in our own self-discovery. And as a writing and life coach, I work with men and women to break through the BS of their lives to find their own voice and leaping into a life they love. It is my belief that when we share our stories of how we overcame what we have been through, it will serve as someone else's survival guide. So if you're ready to get the book out of your head and onto the page, I'd love to hear from you. Go to www.jocelynbellows.com and join me every Tuesday at noon Eastern and Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
And welcome back to, as we walk back into the flow of enlightenment. we're here with GP Walsh and myself, Lisa Berry. And, before we jump in, because I want to come back to the desires and all that. And we have a little story about Buddha we can share about this. But if somebody is listening to this, because what I'm loving is that I get to sit here and ask all these questions and I get to go all over the map. I try to keep it as straight and narrow as I can.
which is not very straight.
I look like I'm drunk. But so as I wander through this, and it's different than the storytelling or, straightforward. It's really just trying to go, wow, what about this and what about this? So, as you're listening, you're getting it's the buffet here. We've got a little taste of everything. And it's important that we do, and everybody, really they have their own issues, their own problems, their own concerns, their own questions. And maybe you're not able to work with GP one-on-one, whether it's the budget or timing or all those things. GP, we're working on creating, it's there now, we've created it, a way that for a very, very small amount, like it's less than $20 US a month, that you can be a part of working with GP and getting a little bit more attention to your inquiries and a little bit more guidance and stuff. So we want to invite you over to the site to there, but I can't believe I'm asking this. But GP, what is the forward slash on that? I know it's...
Well, we haven't fully tested the subscription thing yet.
Okay, so we're now... There you go. It's a pre-launch announcement. There we go. That's what I was saying.
It's coming.
Yes. It's coming. Yes. But I'm really excited about that because I know just how much, some people may go, ooh, do I want to put just my toe in that flowing river, or do I want to jump in? So it is coming, and it does take, for me, GP, asking these questions, I mean, I just feel like I'm in a complete, it gets deeper and deeper and there's more, and I go, okay, I get it. And then the very next thought comes up and I go, oh gosh, now I have another question. going back into the question, the most interesting thing I think is that we've heard the story of Buddha, and I've heard it wrong. I know that all my life up until you clarified it for me, but I did hear that he went off to find enlightenment, and it's not that. He went off for a very different reason, and that was to end suffering. But if you could share that little story a little better and dive into that, that's a very different reason.
Well, it brings a humanness to it, and something much more not so heady, because the term enlightenment can seem very, very heady, very otherworldly. Yes. And that's not what his main focus was. As far as the legend is concerned, he was, he's a rich kid, right? He was a member of the warrior class. His father was a king. He was born a prince. He had every luxury you could possibly imagine. He could do whatever he darn well pleased. And according to the legend, who knows whether this is true or not, at his birth, he had a very auspicious birth, like Christ did. And wise men showed up for Buddha, like they did for Christ, and they told his father that he was either going to be a great king or a spiritual teacher. And his father didn't want him to be a spiritual teacher.
Playing in that band.
And so he groomed him for being the king. And according to the legend, he kept him from experiencing any suffering whatsoever. So, people who deformities were kept away, people got too old, they would be kept away. So he lived in this bubble, which is, it seems like kind of extreme. How do you make that happen? But very wealthy people live in that bubble in our own world. It's not, there's this distorted sense and disconnect from the everyday reality that most people live. Well, one day Prince Siddhartha decided he wanted to go see the town. And his father set everything up so that everybody was off the streets. It was all pretty and everything. So he'd go with his entourage through the city and see nothing but happy sights. Well, as Buddha was riding along, probably on an elephant, right? Something caught his eye. And he got off the elephant and walked over, and he actually saw somebody who was sick. And it kept going, and it kept going. And then somebody who was old, somebody who was decrepit, and eventually he ended up at the charnel ground, the charnel grounds where they did the cremations. Oh. And he realized that everybody ended like that. And he was just viscerally moved by the suffering, and it just shook him so deeply that he left his own wife and child to go looking for the answer to suffering. And that's what he did. And he went through various kinds of spiritual techniques and spiritual practices, all the way to extreme austerity, right? Like Jainism, where he wasn't, you know, eat like a grain of rice a day, didn't bathe, didn't wear clothes, didn't cut his hair. Just the idea was that if you torture the body enough, you'll let go of all desire and all problems, and therefore, you know, attain this perfect state. One day, almost dead, laying on the side of a river, there was an experience that he had. One story in the legend has him hearing somebody giving a lesson on like the sitar or something like that, talking about tuning. He said, "Now, if it's tuned too low, it won't make a sound. If it gets too tight, it'll break. You have to find that middle way." And it dawned on him that torturing the body wasn't going to do it, that there was some other way. And at that moment, some young girl came and brought him some food, saw this terribly, horribly emaciated. This guy looked like death warmed over. And at that point, he decided... that's where he went under the famous under the Bodhi tree to sit and meditate. He said, "I'm not getting up until I have the answer to suffering." And that's where he sat day and night until finally the dawn, it began to break, and the entire thing began to collapse. It was just that absolute willingness to not move from this position, and metaphorically I think you can get what that would mean, until he had seen clearly the answer to suffering. And then his very first sermon that he gave after his awakening was the Four Noble Truths of Suffering, where he just broke the whole thing down and said, "This is the way out of suffering." So, and in fact, if he wouldn't even engage in conversations with people, he didn't engage in academic conversations, this you know, theological point of that. If the question didn't relate directly to alleviating suffering, he wasn't interested. Right. He'd either just ignore them completely, which really pissed a lot of people off, right. or he would just push it away. It doesn't matter. If it doesn't cause suffering, it's not an issue. And so it's a very different picture when you're looking at an image of the famous images of him, and he's always repose, he's in meditation, his eyes are closed or half closed, with this incredibly contented look on his face, right, which represents the end of suffering. That's the whole point of it. And he discovered the cause of suffering was a dependency on the external world and not knowing who you are, and that the true identity of every individual is the Buddha. But thinking I'm this person, I end up engaging with life from the point of view of lacking and needing to get something. And so for him, the end of suffering was not a shift in conditions, but to see that the sufferer never existed. Who you thought you were is the great mirage. And when that's gone, so is all the suffering that goes with it. That's the message of the Buddha.
And it's such a beautiful message that we feel like, gosh, I feel like he, you know, suffered for our sins and all this. But yet, I've heard you share before, like, you know, we don't, like, do we all have to sit and not move and not eat so that we can hear
this answer? Metaphorically, yes. There is a point in your life where you just go, you know what? I'm just not going back there. I mean, we've had this, even in personal development. I'm just not going back there. This is the new me. That's it. You know, I'm quitting smoking. This is it, right? I'm dropping these habits. This is it. And there's an unmovableness about it, right? Mm. And that's really what it represents, right? the commitment to bringing your mind into subjugation to truth. Not wandering around, not distracted, not grabbing at this and that. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what it means to be sitting under the Bodhi tree, the tree of awakening. I'm not moving from this place. That's an internal gesture. It's not an external condition. You don't have to go to the forest or anything like that.
Well, wait.
Matter of fact, don't. Just get a lot of mosquito bites and stuff.
Yes, I like that you just brought that back there, because it's the interpretation, it's the representation, it's what is the symbolism of it. It's not word for word, you know.
Yep. I mean, it's what do these things mean? What do they represent? It was Lenny Bruce, a comedian from the 50s and 60s, who said if Christ had been executed in modern time, all the little Catholic kids would be walking around with little electric chairs around their neck.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh yuck. Oh, isn't I? Oh gosh, that's a weird image. You're right, though. That's how ridiculous that sounds.
Yeah, but somebody reads Power of Now, and then they go and sit on a park bench for 2 years, like he did.
Right. Yes.
As if that's going to do it. Like imitating the circumstances. You can't imitate the circumstances. But you do imitate the internal posture that brought them there.
Right. And you know what's interesting when you said that about the interpretation part is the food. If he wasn't eating, well, that does, they're not saying you don't eat, but what I am hearing, what I'm interpreting, that is a lot of people, well, they are suffering, but they distract themselves with food. They are just, so it's not that he's not eating to, I need to starve myself to death. He's that is a distraction of finding pleasure or a quenching a thirst, and then thinking, okay, good. I've got that covered at least. I don't have to do this.
Yeah, I'm done. Work. Yeah. I mean, you eat because you're hungry.
Yes.
Right. But when we're eating because something emotionally is hungry and not getting fed, well, it doesn't matter how much you eat, right? Because the food can't feed that.
Right.
I mean, the food does what it does, you know? Relationships do what they do. The problem is that what we seek to get out of relationships and money and career are what they cannot give. Let them give what they're going to give. A relationship is wonderful. It gives all sorts of wonderful things. But it will not give you the reality of your being. It will not give you the truth. And thinking that it will is the big mistake. And of course, that destroys relationships, because why aren't you getting me what I need? Because I can't.
Go get it yourself. when we think we are happier because we ate, because we have a loving relationship, because we got the raise in pay. But are we not really finding some kind of fulfillment or joy?
No. What you've done is satisfy a desire. The desire is gone, and then there's this feeling of relief. Period. That's all it is. That's not happiness.
Relief is not happiness. Ah, no. That's right.
That's right. I knew that.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I know. That's a big one. That's a big one. You can mistake relief for happiness. Oh.
Yes. But there is a feeling there. When the relief happens, right? I have a desire. The desire gets quenched. The desire is gone. That's the relief. Now, what's the feeling underneath? The feeling underneath is what it feels like when desire is quenched. That feeling, or what I say, that feeling of not needing to chase a desire, right, is true contentment.
Not needing to chase the desire, not quenching it, but just not even chasing it in the first place.
Yes. Well, that's the transcending of all desire. The all desire disappears, and that is eternal happiness.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the big question. Can we get there in our lifetime? Is that, like, I feel like that's almost impossible. Or would it be a boring life if you had no desires?
Oh, it's not like that.
Okay. Yeah. You're not selling this right now. No, I'm gone.
it's not like that. It's attachment to the desires. Desires come and go. If I feel I need to fill that desire in order to be happy, I have created a relationship with it. I've created discontent in myself, and now my life is going to be pursuing that. I'm no longer looking inward. I'm no longer sitting in my content space. You can't get through life without it. Life is desire, right? Mm-hmm. The only reason you and I are here talking is our parents had desire for each other.
Right, yes.
That's it. That's the only reason. We eat because we have a desire to eat. We breathe because we have a desire to breathe, right? But you can't get away from that, right? That's going to be there. So it isn't the desirer that the Buddha focused on, just like it wasn't the suffering. It was the sufferer.
Oh.
It's the desirer that you want to focus on. The desire's there, but without somebody there to make up a story about it and take ownership of it and make it important, it's just this energy pattern that arises and subsides. It may fulfill itself, it may not. It doesn't matter. It's the identification with the desirer that is the cause of the suffering, not the desire itself.
I'm laughing at how so many times, I probably don't say it as much anymore, but I definitely have to be like, I will die if I don't get this or have this or do this. I'm suffering already.
Oh, yeah. The suffering starts immediately. The moment I project my happiness on an external object, I immediately enter into suffering. I am now feeling lack in the system. And then that lack drives my life, because the motivation is to get out of the suffering, and it drives my life towards that object. And we've all been trained that it's some external object I have to get. And so this is the perpetuation of it. This is Shiva's wheel. On and on and on it goes. It is endless. You have to step off that treadmill.
That was beautiful. We'll go to commercial because that is a huge one. I love that. It's yeah, absolutely not the desiring. It's the desirer. It's not the suffering. It's the sufferer. And we are all now self-inquirers. So come on back to the flow of enlightenment right after commercials.
Conscious media for conscious minds. Om Times.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. And I would love to, first of all, invite everybody to always stay connected with us and join in all the fun discussions that we have and question asking and courses. I mean, they're just so well. You can definitely become a pro inquirer here, a self-inquirer. And we're inviting everybody to come to gpwalsh.com to just begin there. That's your best bet. Get on the light letter so you can hear, you know, what's going on, what events are coming up, and what courses and classes and just your even private sessions. GP, when we was actually, you had sent this lovely picture of the Buddha over, and I, and yeah, it just was, there's so much peace when I look at Buddha myself, you know, when I see that representation. For you, what does the Buddha mean for you? Do you, what relationship do you have with the Buddha?
I don't have a relationship with the Buddha. I am the Buddha.
You are the Buddha. See, I knew that. That was a trick of the trap. No.
Yeah, I mean, the Buddha is the awakened one. So it's all of you. You are the Buddha. As Buddha himself said, the ordinary human being is the Buddha. This isn't a great, you know, pat me on the back, aren't I wonderful kind of thing. Although if you want to, it's, you know, it's quite all right. But but it's simply the recognition of what's true. Right? It's there, it's not, you know, it's not an egoic position. Right? It's, it is what is true. This is your real nature. The Buddha represents the truth of your being. That's why it's often referred to as Buddha nature. You are that. You are the appearance of the One. The human form is a manifestation of the infinite beingness that is the essence of all of us. So that's the true self, and this form is an appearance. The problem is we have mistaken the appearance of the form for ourselves and forgotten that we are not the appearance. You are not the, you are not the illusion. You're not the mirage. You're the desert.
Yes.
And so it's simply a matter of correct identification. Correct identification is what dismantles and eliminates the sufferer.
Oh, I like that. The correct identification. No, the dismantling. Okay, I gotcha. And then we can eliminate the suffering.
Yes, because there's no sufferer left. And the Buddha doesn't suffer. That's the contented image you see, that peaceful image. That's that is an, the energy that's free from suffering. It's free from desire. It's free from worry. It's free from the tyranny of what's next.
Are we able to see or witness the Buddha in others before we see that we are Buddha?
No, not really. We can believe that it's there. It can come into our hearts as a feeling that you somehow intuitively know is true. Okay. But as long as I'm identified as a person, I'm going to look around and I'm going to see persons everywhere.
Right.
Simple as that. If I'm when I recognize myself as the Buddha, I will see the Buddha everywhere. How can I not? Because it is the essential nature of all beings. You see that there is no suffer. The suffer is imagined. It is just an image in the mind. But the reality is, you are that. You are the Buddha. You are the One. You are Shiva being. You are Krishna consciousness, or whatever you want to call it. It is simply the truth of your being. And the truth is true whether you believe it or not.
Yes. Oh, gosh, that's funny, because I remember saying that, you know, maybe my parents or something, I'm like, that's the truth, though. I'm like, you can believe it or not, but I'm not changing it because that's the truth. You know, and I would have such confidence with that one, right?
But, of course, stamp your little feet.
That's right. Well, and funny, because I was just going to say about little kids, you know, when we might, you know, us wise adults, you know, when we see children, we're thinking, gosh, they think they have it so hard. Oh, life is so tough. They just need a nap. But they really are suffering. But because we know, is it kind of like that? You kind of, once you, if you can make the sufferer disappear kind of thing, that you literally see others, you don't see their suffering either, because it doesn't exist. Just like you might think a little kid is suffering, but they're not.
Well, your illusions about suffering going away, you become extremely aware of other people's suffering because you know the cause of it.
Right.
This is the bodhisattva. This is what awakens the compassionate side of wisdom. It isn't a detachment. That's why Buddha taught, constantly, all day, every day, for 50 years. Why? To alleviate suffering.
it's, oh my gosh, okay, that's, I'm having a moment. That's big. So, well, which is kind of sad, but the more enlightened we become, the more we actually are compassionate and feel for the others, but only because we can see that we're not joining in misery anymore. We are
right.
So wanting them to, yeah.
You see somebody, tossing and turning with a nightmare. What do you do?
Wake them up.
You wake them up.
Oh, well, that was really beautiful.
You don't just sit there and go, well, that you attracted that in your life. You deal with it.
If you would just wake up. You know?
I'll wait here. You come to me. I mean, come on.
That is the most amazing, in-your-face, real kind of thing. That is so... I don't even know how that could be a t-shirt, but I like it. We often do that. We do, though. Oh, you're so, that's so right. Because a lot of us will stand there and say, gosh, if they would just wake up, or they need to do something about that nightmare. But how does one in waking up? Is it through compassion?
You cut out there for a little bit. How does one...
How does one help to wake someone up from a nightmare? Is it through compassion? Is it or is it not their business?
first wake yourself up.
Right? Ah, okay.
You know, Christ put it beautifully. He says, before you move the sliver from your brother's eye, take the log out of your own.
Yes. Oh gosh.
You know, you commit to your own unmoving position. And compassion will find a way, right? The right word, the right gesture. Sometimes just being present with somebody in their suffering, even when there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
You find a way. Because when you're free of suffering, then you can be with suffering.
Oh,
and
right.
now you're the beacon, right? This is what is meant when we're talking about Christ taking on the sins of the world. This is what was meant.
Yes.
That he could easily be with it because it would just be transmuted in his presence. Because he would feel it, but it didn't stick, right? There was nothing in him that it would attach to. And therefore, it, literally like a lightning rod, it would be transmuted just passing through him. And people would get healed just walking by him.
Yes, because they don't see it in there. He doesn't see it. It's
he
not
did
reflected
not see
in his eyes.
For him, it was an illusion, and he saw the God in them. He lived in a perpetual namaste.
Yeah. Oh, the light in me sees the light in you. Oh, you know, my mother used to say that when we were little. I would have something do something. I would maybe have an ugly cut or something. I'm like, how can you not look at that and get grossed out or something like this? And she'd be like, I don't see. I see you. And you're perfect. I love you. You're my daughter. And it was just, well, there you go.
Wow. I want to have your parents.
I know.
Man, did I get the short end of this stick?
I do get really lucky. Yes.
You, whoa, damn, what did you do in your last life? Good God.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually an interesting thing too, because I think, well, gosh, how do, you know, not that I have all that many problems, but you know, we all have our problems. And I think, well, gosh, if I was really shown and taught, I felt it. Like, it was funny. You had said something in the show you just did with Rosalind, and you had mentioned the time that when you had first felt love, like for the very first time you felt loved. And I thought, oh, what a great question to ask. Well, I think it's a great question to ask people. I hope they don't feel bad, but you know, when was the first time you felt loved? And I kind of always remember feeling loved. And so I wonder though, but, and then I have to put a but in there. Why have I still had moments and experiences of suffering? Why couldn't I just stay as Buddha? You know?
Well, the blessing of having a relatively conflict-free life is a great asset. It makes you very receptive to this message. But everybody experiences, everybody was born as a human, experiences identification with conditioning. the arising of the egoic mind and a sense of being separate. It always happens. Even the most perfect in the most perfect parenting cannot avoid it. It needs to happen. You know, for some, it may be so good that they don't actually become spiritually inclined. They just kind of assume everything is going to be really, really, really well, go really, really well, which is the case of people who are extremely wealthy. They have very, very rarely does somebody extremely wealthy, you know, get a taste for this kind of thing. Just because they've just been so well indoctrinated into their particular environment. But everybody falls. This is the fall. It was illustrated in Adam and Eve. It happens to everybody. There is no getting around it. And it has to happen. We have to fall from that perfect state of undifferentiated consciousness into a sense of identification with form, which is the cause of suffering. That sense of being of the separate self, which is the sufferer, so that the awakening can take place. But this time, it isn't just the undifferentiated, ignorant sense of perfection, like a child or a dog. It is the sage. It is the conscious awareness that I am that, and it takes the fall in order for that to be precipitated. We have to get kicked out of the garden. Or we'll never find the reality of our being.
That explains a lot for like everyone. Well, it is. It literally does. It literally does.
It's not a mistake.
Yeah.
It's not a mistake. Whether you had a good childhood or a horrific one, it's not a mistake.
That kind of does unite us all. You know, that's
it does. Well, suffering unites us all.
Yes.
Probably that is the common human experience, even more than love.
Oh, wow. Ooh. And yet we don't want to wish it away or be afraid of it, because that is suffering right there.
We have to understand it, yes.
Yes.
We have to understand its origin. Yeah. Wanting anything to be different than what it is creates suffering.
It's
unavoidable. So we have to understand the nature of suffering. That's what Buddha sought to do.
Yes,
what is
exactly.
The actual nature of suffering? And he arrived at the liberation from it, which was also enlightenment.
That was so well said, you know, because this show was on Buddha, and that's what it is understanding the nature of suffering. And my final question on this one, if we are to understand the nature of suffering, do we first must know who we are, or do like the who am I, the self-inquiry, or is it we have to understand the nature of suffering in order to find out who we are?
Well, they go hand in hand.
Okay.
Because the misunderstanding of who you are is what makes you identified with the conditioning that you now take on as yourself and become the sufferer. So the ignorance as to who you are is what creates the false sense of self that is the sufferer.
Yes.
So inquiring into the nature of the sufferer, right? What makes up this sufferer? And as you begin to take it apart, you recognize that what it is a collection of thoughts, feelings, emotions, memories, associations that are all part of just the programming of the nervous system upon which a sense of identity has been projected. There's no self there. There's no person there. There's only this very complex functioning of your nervous system. But we have identified with that, projected upon that, a person that doesn't actually exist in it. That's the mirage in the desert. And thinking I am that person is where the suffering comes from. Dismantle that. Go look for the person. You can find painful thoughts. You can find painful emotions. You can find painful sensations. You can find memories. You can find all that in terms of experience. But look, you will never find the sufferer. There's nobody there. Just like there's no mirage in the desert. You'll find the desert. You'll find the heat. You'll find the wind. You'll find the thirst. You'll find the sweat. You'll find the distortions in the airwaves as the heat rises off of the sand. But you will never find the mirage. That's a projection. The self, the person, is a projection onto the functioning of life. And there's no problem with life. There's no suffering in life. But when I become a person projected on it, which does not actually exist except as a thought, I now become the sufferer.
I would love to ask you, GP, as in our final minute that I'm here, because that was so beautiful, and I'm imagining this desert of Mirage. I don't know if you already do have a meditation, where of a self-inquiry meditation, where you take us on that type of a journey. But I'm going to request and see if that exists, and can we maybe do one around that and dismantling the mirage. And I will invite anybody who's interested in any kind of meditation or working with GP or coming to one of the events or even just saying, hey, when is that song on Sundays, to email us at questions@gpwalsh.com, or just come to the site and you'll find us how to get there anyways. But thank you so much, GP.
Thanks, Lisa.
Bye, everyone. We'll see you next Tuesday on The Flow of Enlightenment.